Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 10 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. As always, we will talk to Kelly Leonard a little bit later about why you're not supposed to tell their kids they're smart. I think this is a fascinating book by a Stanford professor, and we'll pick that around a little bit later in the program. Amy Guth will be here, the host of The Daily Gist, but we'd like to start Tuesdays with a visit from our friend John Najarian from CNBC. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Well, great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, I'm going to ask you, I got two words for you. Michael Bloomberg, what do you make of that?
Well, he did a great job, I would say, as a neutral party here in New York. I'll say that I thought Michael did a great job as the mayor of New York. I'm looking forward to him running a spirited campaign, and I'm sure with him backing himself, not taking money from any special interest whatsoever, that's something I think that's a little bit of a breath of fresh air
environment. I asked John because I think Wall Street's probably frightened of most of the Democrats, and it seems as if he might be one that would be a little more palatable there.
Absolutely, and that's why he's running. Yeah. He and Deval Patrick both were afraid that the pendulum had swung too far to the left and that they would perhaps nominate a candidate who would be unacceptable to 80% of the country as far as landmass, and they worried that all the flyover states would be left without a candidate except for Trump.
Do you think he has a chance?
Sure he does. I mean, he's going to put $1 billion allegedly into this. He's hired a guy from Facebook that knows a thing or two about not only using that platform for advertising, which they do still take political ads on Facebook.
Right.
But he's also, you know, got a huge $100 million budget just in the short term for ads. So I think we'll know pretty quickly whether he has a real chance or not.
John, all I want...
He's a strong businessman.
All I want is a $100 million budget. That's all I'm after.
I wouldn't be unhappy with that either.
So we're going to talk Black Friday a little bit later. And of course, this is a key time for retail. Black Friday doesn't seem to matter as much as it used to. So I don't know what the impact will be there. But I see a couple of retailers doing very well today. Dick's is, last I saw, up 20%. Best Buy was up 9% on the trading today.
Yeah. And, you know, since you and I have been lucky enough to do this for a while together, yeah. Every year in Labor Day, I say, that's when you buy the retailers. You buy them just out of Labor Day, and you sell them going into this, because this is their Super Bowl. They've already, as you know, Wall Street is a look-ahead mechanism. They do have the show-me time, which is earnings, and you just cited two of the winners in the earnings cycle, as opposed to the losers like Macy's. But I am one of those people who are taking profits on these big pops from the retailers, because I don't know that it gets any better than this with all those, like you say, the Black Friday, it's now a week-long event.
Right, right.
And then you've got Cyber Monday, which also becomes a week-long event.
And what are you looking at today? Give us your tip.
Tip today would be ADI, Analog Devices, ADI. A lot of big upside buying in that particular stock in the short term, both December and January. So we were buying that one for clients today.
John Najarian, follow him at the Twitter at John Najarian. Of course, watch him on CNBC at the Halftime Report as well. Friend, it has been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you, Stephen.
It is 17 minutes after 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Kelly Leonard is in the studio. Of course, He's the host of the podcast, Getting to Yes. And Kelly, welcome back.
Hi.
I love this topic today. This
me too.
Stanford professor, Dr. Jo Bowler.
Yes.
And she writes about how I shouldn't be afraid of doing math.
Right, exactly.
But I am afraid of doing math.
I am too. Yeah. This was a big part of the conversation. So her work, she's does a lot of work with neuroscientists, and what they discovered is that the brain actually becomes more powerful and changes when you make mistakes and struggle with things. So part of the problem we've got is when we're young and we get our math problems wrong,
right,
we stop wanting to try.
Okay, so tell me, she says she comes upon people almost every day who hold themselves up by their... Well, is it a fear?
It's fear.
Is it a fear?
So this is the thing, right? I think we've talked about this before. The thing we know in improvisation in my field is that people are terrible improvisers when they're working out of fear.
Okay.
That is the thing. So all the beginning classes are about getting you out of your fear and shame brain. Because, in fact, that the regions that light up in the brain when you're afraid make you incapable of learning in the moment.
You know, I'm just personally, I was down at Miami of Ohio last week. You know, my son is in the sketched out improv there. Mm-hmm. And watching them do a show. And as I hear you say that, I think of those kids on the stage. And you're right.
Oh, I mean, you can tell the ones who are scared.
Or less than that, you can tell the ones who are not fearful.
Yes,
you
that
know,
too.
I think it's a better way to look at it that way.
And that's all. The people you love in your time at Second City, the Chris Farleys and the Mike Myers and the Colberts and Tina Fey's, are completely fearless. They've sort of learned this quality. And I think it's interesting when Joe talks about the damage you can do to your kid, and you tease this, right?
Right.
By saying
you're smart.
And she's like, the problem with that is then they're going to think that when they get something wrong, that they're dumb.
Right.
And it's all around this idea of a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. Have you heard of that before?
Tell me about it.
So Carol Dweck is a famous Stanford professor and a friend of Joe's. And she's done a ton of work recognizing that the best learners operate from a growth mindset. They don't think things are black or white. It's not a yes or no. It's that they're willing to struggle with ideas and get to the truth, and people with a fixed mindset just believe one thing is true, and you can give them all the evidence in the world. I mean, it's funny we're having this conversation.
Here we live.
Yeah. But that's a problem, right? Because things are more nuanced, and we just happen to live in a world that doesn't seem much interested in nuance right now.
And so she also says that getting questions right is not a good brain exercise.
So everyone should think about this.
This makes me think of everyone getting a medal. I'm not one of those guys who thinks everyone gets a medal.
No,
but,
I get you.
Yeah.
But also, you don't learn from your successes. You learn from your failures.
Right.
And I think that's just generally true. Often when you succeed, you don't really know why you succeeded. But when you fail, you usually have a clear idea. So getting comfortable with failure, again, this is such an improv
thing. It goes back to the fear thing, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a really important quality if you want to learn, especially in groups. And she has also evidence that we learn better failing in groups, that the support we get from the sort of group brain is a better way than sort of studying alone by yourself.
So what would she have me do? Should I pick up a Sudoku book and start there, or how do I start doing my math?
Yeah, well, this is it's funny. I was working on...
That would be a baby step, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's making yourself be okay being uncomfortable. I had to actually do this morning. I was writing out a bunch of prompts, and I was thinking of what are ways that are not like improv exercises for people to make themselves uncomfortable. And one was, next Uber or Lyft, start a conversation with a driver.
No can do.
Right? But you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
My friend Neil always says, he tells his clients, when you go into the Hudson's at the airport, get a magazine that you would never have read before.
Okay.
You know, on a topic that you don't think you're interested in, and read it. You're going to make discoveries. Even just walking around in like a silly hat or a silly shirt and seeing what that feels like. We always think that the earth is going to end because we're embarrassed,
right.
And we got to get rid of that.
It's about your shrinking your own world.
It is about shrinking your own world. And the thing about the sort of neural pathways when you make these mistakes, they get stronger. One of the stories she talks about in the book is around the cab drivers in London. Do you know about this?
No, I don't know. They studied
all these cabbies because, you know, you have to like study for years.
Rigorous testing.
And their brains are on fire. They know everywhere where they're going to go. And what they studied was also their brains after they retired. And guess what? After a couple years of not using that activity, their neural pathways lessened.
Diminished, right.
They diminished.
Okay, so take me back to the classroom then, because teachers often feel it's their role to make their students comfortable in learning.
Right.
and they're better off if they make them. I'm thinking of Mr. Hickey in high school. He made me very uncomfortable in learning.
Because he let you fail?
Because he certainly challenged me, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's my favorite teachers are the ones who make sure we understand that it's a safe place to fail. I mean, this is safe spaces is a loaded word. But what we're really talking about is if you want people to learn and have their brain improve, they have to struggle with the problems. And that's why multiple choice doesn't really work. It's why the standardized testing doesn't really work because it doesn't speak to how we actually learn.
She makes reference in an interview I read. I don't know if it was in your book or what you read about a study by, I think it was by Jeff Cohen.
Yeah.
And it was about just the teachers grading English papers and writing one sentence at the end of the critique. Do you remember what that is?
Oh, no, I don't.
Okay. So, he studied all these English students, high school English students, and the teachers would write critiques on the paper, corrections. Yep. And at the end, the teachers would write for half of them, quote, "I'm giving you this feedback because I believe in you," end quote. And so that was sort of the encouragement to allow for the failure. And those people a year later tended to do twice as well in English.
There's another thing. I don't know if it's from the same study that we did talk about, which is another thing where words are important, which is when someone got a problem wrong and you say to them, did you get the problem wrong? You don't say yes, you say or did you solve the problem? You say not yet.
Because it still could be done.
It still can be done.
And so you'd also say, she said, I'm interested in your creativity in that answer or things like that.
Yeah. So using language, this is kind of like yes and, right?
Yeah.
The whole idea around yes and is our default setting is to say no to things. And so when you are forced to say yes and, you are remaining open to a possibility, even if it seems kind of crazy, like you can't get there. So I do find it very interesting that the words matter, right? So smart. It can be problematic, and not yet is better than I don't have it or
right.
No.
All right, let's go back to smart and tell me why it is that when I come upon a toddler who can put a circle into a circle peg or whatever that, and I don't say, I should not say, you're so smart.
No, because they're going to get it wrong at another time, and they're going to think, then I'm not smart. And we're not smart or not smart. We do smart things, and we do not smart things. But we get so wrapped up in our identity as, and you and I both have it, I'm not a maths person.
Right.
And she's English, so maths.
Listen to you, you're so Brit. I'm maths.
That's where she talks.
Yeah.
But, I didn't think I was good at that. But I could play guitar. And then I realized, music is math, all these notes. So I do know it very well in another context.
Okay, so in all seriousness, I was joking about the Sudoku book, but what do we do? I mean, I don't necessarily want to improve in math, but what do we do to sort of exercise our brains to challenge ourselves this way? I'm also not going to wear a funny hat.
Okay, well, take an improv class.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's like, what is the thing that's going to be a little uncomfortable for you that you want to try? And so for myself, I'm now working out with a personal trainer.
I've noticed that, Kelly. You look great.
Thank you. So, but I am pushing myself to do things that I was previously very uncomfortable. Like, I always thought I'm someone who's not limber.
Right.
And guess what? When you work at it for a little while,
You become limber. You know, that's interesting, though, because you just brought up two examples that are not solo ventures.
Right.
Right? Is that significant?
I think so. I mean, she talks a lot about that. They did studies of various populations and actually did this with ethnicities. And they found that these Asian students were doing much better. Turns out it's not because they're Asian. It was that they all work together.
They work together. Right. And so how does this apply to business?
Think about it inside your own business. So there's a lot of corporate learning. And what we tend to check a box. And that's not good corporate learning. Good corporate learning is challenging your people and knowing that they're going to get some stuff wrong and make sure it's okay that they're going to get some stuff wrong on their way to become smarter about the things they do.
The name of the podcast is Getting to Yes And. It's up at WGNRadio.com. The name of the book is Limitless Mind, and the author is?
Joe Bowler.
And she comes from Stanford University.
Yes, she does.
Kelly Leonard, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:35. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Jim Wilcox is on the phone line now. He's a senior electronics editor at Consumer Reports and is writing all about Black Friday this week. Jim, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you've got a piece up about the 10 Black Friday shopping tips for 2019. I'm going to jump around a little bit because one of the things that jumped out at me first off, I mean, talk about the need to be prepared and all of that, but you said to check not just online advertisements, but look at print advertisements as well. They kind of surprised me a little bit because I don't know that we think of print that much anymore.
So, you know, in the old days, that was the only way you got this information, you know, and you would go to your local store on Black Friday. Things have changed so much, though, over the last couple of years. So there's now a month of sales that lead up to Black Friday. And what happens a lot of times is that retailers either release or they leak their ads ahead of time. So even though, you know, print may seem like it's, you know, the 1980 sort of technology, in fact, you can get a good idea for a lot of the sales by looking at circulars, and a lot of those printed circulars are now available on a ton of Black Friday websites, and those websites let you sometimes sort by the product categories you're interested in. So you're looking at these print ads, but they're online, and, you know, there's sort of new technologies that you can use to leverage to be able to go through all those kinds of deals.
And, you know, Jim, I certainly didn't mean to put down print. I'm a huge newspaper fan and everything like that. It just wasn't what I was expecting right off. Tell me about those websites where you can go now and sort of figure out what deals are available.
So a lot of them just have the name Black Friday in their name. So we look at sites like bfads.net, bestblackfriday.com, Deal News has a Black Friday website, the blackfriday.com. So if you do a search on Black Friday, a lot of them will come up. And you can sign up on these sites, and they'll send you deal alerts, which, as I mentioned, you can sometimes filter by product category.
And so, but you at Consumer Reports, have you vetted these Black Friday sites?
So we've used these same sites for a couple of years. You know, by vetted, it means that we've looked, we've seen that the deals that they're releasing are actually true. You know, one of the things that we do is a lot of times you'll just see an ad for a 55-inch TV, for example. It won't give you the brand, the manufacturer. One of the things that we add to that sort of, you know, recipe is that we go through, we give you the exact model numbers, and then we often have reviewed those TVs, and we'll tell you how well they did, because a lot of times the cheapest TVs aren't the best TVs.
So you would go to another website to see the deals, but then go to consumerreports.com to see the quality of what's for sale?
Yeah, exactly. So as I said, a lot of times, you know, the ads don't identify the specific model number. Sometimes certain retailers have their own codes that they use, but it's hard for a consumer to decode them. And so we do that for the readers.
I had no idea until maybe it was yesterday or last week that there was such a thing as a derivative TV that was made and marketed just for Black Friday. And when it came up earlier in the show, people said, you know, be careful for that because you might not be getting what you think you're getting. You're actually suggesting that it might be a nice deal and something to look at.
They can be. And one of the things that we're trying to do is I'm trying to do a sort of a statistical evaluation of how these TVs do compared to the models that you usually see. So these derivatives are TVs. They're typically a little bit lower priced than the regular sets that you see. Sometimes the model number will differ by a letter or a number. And they come out this time of year. One of the things that manufacturers and retailers like is that because the model numbers are different, they don't have to abide by any price match guarantees that might exist on the regular models. But in the evaluations that we've done so far, we find that they often perform very similarly to the regular models that they're based on, and they can, in fact, be decent deals for consumers.
Okay, my head could be swimming at this then. So if I'm looking for a TV and I identify this as maybe a derivative, how do I know if it's a good idea or a bad idea?
So you would want to see whether or not, you know, that TV has been reviewed by anyone. You know, we review about 250 TVs a year, which is more than any other publication, I think, in the industry. And what we try to do is save some room at the end of the year to actually evaluate these TVs. And so, you know, if you can look and do online, type in that model number and then, like, comma review and see if anyone's actually looked at those TVs. There's no guarantee that they're going to perform similarly. And sometimes they may have one or two fewer features, so it may have one less HDMI input or something. But by and large, from the major brands, when we've seen derivatives, they've performed very similar to what we've seen with their lower price TVs.
And tell me again then, so why do the companies do this? Just because then they don't have to do price matching, or because they take out some features to make them more affordable? Or why would they go through the bother of doing that just for Black Friday?
I mean, the answer is yes to both of those things. So, you know, they're trying to hit price points. So, you know, Black Friday, unlike maybe the Super Bowl, where you're seeing good deals, but you're seeing good deals on better TVs, the Black Friday is just so price-driven that they want to be able to introduce some newer models at a lower price, take a little bit less profit, if any profit, on them. And sometimes, you know, we see doorbuster specials, which are offered by retailers, and they'll use a derivative, and they won't make any money or may lose money on it, because the whole idea behind a doorbuster is to get you into the store or shopping online in the hopes that once you're there, you'll buy other more profitable goods.
It's so great you bring that up, too, and I want to emphasize that a little bit. So go buy the TV, but don't buy the HDMI cable to go with the TV.
Yeah, so you know that you'll need some accessories if you're buying a new TV, and you know, fortunately or unfortunately for retailers, that's where they make higher margins. So you may go in, you buy a TV, they're making 10 points on it, but they're going in and selling you some cables where they're making 50 or 60 points on it. So our advice is that if you know you're going to need cables or another accessory, buy it from an online retailer before you buy the TV so that you're not pushed into a situation where you go into a store and then they're only showing you the higher priced accessories.
Okay, tell me about these apps that I can bring in on my smartphone, scan the code, the barcode on the product, and then find better deals elsewhere.
So, you know, the great thing is that you are able to leverage technology to help you in your shopping. So, you know, we've looked at a variety of different phone apps by via Shopkick, ShopSavvy, and Shopular are ones that we've seen. And they let you scan barcodes and QR codes to compare prices, sometimes get discounts, or you can get coupons from stores for discounts.
Okay, and that's easily done, right? Just download that and bring it into the store with you. So you've looked at these buy via ShopKip, ShopSavvy, Shopular. Those are the ones that you suggest?
Yeah, those are all the ones that we've looked at. There are a lot of them, but again, you know, if the best thing to do is to go into one of the, you know, app stores, either the Apple App Store or the Google App Store, see the reviews on them. These are ones that we've used, so we're familiar with them, but every year there are new ones. But, you know, there is a danger of downloading an app that's malware, so we stick with the major brands and those that have a lot of good reviews on them.
From
a major app store.
Absolutely, thank you. So it used to be routine. When my kids were younger, my parents would watch our kids. My wife and I would go out on Black Friday sort of as an escape, you know, and try to use these store coupons. And I always found that the coupons weren't nearly as valuable as they appeared when you read them first because of things that were excluded and all of that. So that's one thing to watch for. But the other thing is to check return policies, right? Because return policies on Black Friday might be different than they are on other days.
Exactly. You know, you really need to take a look at the fine print. So some of those doorbuster specials you'll see are in limited quantities or they're only available for a short period of time. So there's not a big likelihood of you actually getting one. You know, we expect more retailers to price match specific deals this year, but some stores suspend their price match guarantees during Black Friday. So you really need to read the fine print and also check the return and exchange policies to make sure that the store isn't going to charge a restocking fee if you decide that you want to bring that item back.
Jim Wilcox is a senior electronics editor at Consumer Reports. All right, what are you going to be buying on Friday, Jim?
I'm not buying anything. Actually, our family is a little weird. We do a bigger Thanksgiving Day on the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to be cooking.
That keeps you out of trouble.
But there's Cyber Monday to look forward to, and that's a little easier because I don't have to actually go anywhere other than my office and jump on a computer.
Well, listen, have a happy Thanksgiving both days.
Same to you, and thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Okay, I don't think I've seen a story as wild as this Outcome Health story. Rishi Shah and Shraddha Agarwal, former guests of the Wintrust Business Lunch, and two other executives are now charged in a 26-count indictment over fraud. This is after they agreed to pay $70 million and clean up their wrongdoings. This story is significant because they made national and a global impact. Unicorn was being thrown around a lot in Chicago, and Rishi Shah even made the Forbes 400 Richest American list in 2017 as the youngest newcomer. The amount of people they had to dupe was amazing, and quite honestly, jaw-dropping. They'll be losing a lot of money, though, and possibly facing jail time. But the Ricketts aren't losing any money. Quite the opposite. Charles Schwab is buying industry competitor TD Ameritrade for a whopping $26 billion. And who's the founder of TD Ameritrade? Joe Ricketts, the father of Tom Ricketts, the owner of the Cubs. And though Joe is no longer actively part of the company, he'll probably see some of that money. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. 12:51 on this Tuesday afternoon. Amy Guth is in the studio. She, of course, is the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. Welcome back.
Hello.
Okay, so I want to be careful about the pork I'm eating.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. When a few months ago, we heard there were going to be a little bit more of an honor system at a lot of pork processing plants. So I think a lot of people bristled, even though that is not necessarily cause of this, because that's still kind of down the road. But nonetheless, a local pork producer, they're based in Maywood. They're called Morris Meat. They've recalled about 500,000 pounds
wow.
of raw pork products. And so there's not any health complaint. There's nothing specific, but they received some information that it could possibly be not what you want to eat. So they're asking people to return it or throw it out.
So the government says they were produced without the benefit of federal inspection.
That's right. From their statement, it said that they, quote, received an anonymous tip that the firm was producing products without the benefit of inspection. So they are erring on the side of caution. My worry, of course, is like, oh, a lot of people make that secondary thing for Thanksgiving. They'll do a turkey and maybe a ham, or they'll
right.
put bacon on it or whatever. So, you know, you want to check that for sure to see if it is produced from Morris Meat.
But we don't know that there's anything wrong with this meat.
We don't, right.
And we don't know specifically. They've not really been
No accused. One's gotten sick, right. They're not accusing of an outbreak or anything. They're just
But I mean accused of a crime or anything like
no,
that yet.
No,
or anything,
not at all.
Like
no, okay. They're just saying they did not comply with the regulation
right.
of how much you're supposed
Someone should
to.
Look at it.
Somebody yeah. should have been watching them do that. Yeah.
I think it's funny that it goes back to November 25th of 2017.
Yeah.
So do you have two-year-old pork in your...
I know. Does anyone like keep bacon? But
well,
I think
you know
freeze
what?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've got two-year-old stuff in my freezer.
Maybe like a canned ham
yeah.
or something.
You know why? Because I never have ordered Grubhub. Never in my life have I ordered Grubhub.
Good for you. No.
And they're not in trouble in New York, but they're getting some scrutiny in New
well,
York.
Well, this has been kind of a boiling topic that I've watched with a lot of interest, because restaurants, you know, you don't go into a restaurant to make a ton of money. Their profit margins are pretty modest.
Mm-hmm.
Even a very high-end restaurant, not going to be huge. Usually 10% or less, some around 3%. So when we are talking about like wages and things like that, that's where restaurants, that you know, that's a big issue for them. So the issue of food delivery apps becomes a very contentious one, because they are doing there's a lot of practices that the restaurant delivery companies are saying, hey, we're driving traffic to you, we're getting people in the door, we're introducing people
right.
to your product. But in fact, restaurant owners are saying, we're paying up to 33% commission, even in times we don't get the order.
Oh, I remember this. Right. Explain that for me.
This is a really strange story, but essentially in a couple of markets, namely Philly and New York, some of those companies have kind of a cloaked phone number. So when you Google it, you Google their listing, you're like, okay, I'm going to call Cafe so-and-so and order some food. You go to a Grubhub number who then routes the order over to that cafe.
Right.
Even if you don't place the order and actually order any food, there's still
they're still paying for that, right?
So now there's an appeal process. Any restaurant that wants to appeal it, they were given 120 days to do so. But the New York City Council has said, no, you need to make them whole. Yeah, you need to do that. You need
okay.
to fix that. You need to extend that. There should not be a deadline for getting that.
And the other thing is, you know, Grubhub's great because it is exposing new people to your product. But if you're not sitting in the restaurant, you're not buying the glass of wine, or you're not being talked into the appetizer. Or
you're not tipping
like that.
The waiter who works for wage. You know, you're not doing things. And interestingly, that's kind of the thing that the apps have stood behind, of like, hey, we're bringing people to your restaurant.
Sure.
The New York City Council did some independent research and found that's not the case. You're actually less likely to go into a restaurant if you became aware of them because of a food delivery service, because you're just like, oh, those burritos they brought me that time was they were delicious.
Why are you going to buy?
I'll go there.
Why are you going to buy the cow, Amy?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
One other thing, then, John Plitz has something up on cannabis that I know 7 more medical marijuana dispensaries got approval to sell recreational pot today. But
yes.
it's going to be a hard slog for some of these people.
It really is. And, you know, January 1st is the date we've been focused on, but May 1st is another really important date that we're looking on in the cannabis world, because that's when all the new licenses come up. People that are like, I'm not in this game now, I
right.
want to get into it. But John Plitz did this very cool thing for the Cranes Forum, which is a deep dive on some really important topics. And this is another one. And so he's really looking at the social equity piece. And he talked to some fascinating people that have really interesting kind of stakeholder pieces of this topic.
Check it out at the Daily Gist. It drops this afternoon. Amy Guth, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks so much.